want to tell you a story. Jesus, Moses, and an old man go golfing. And the first one to tee off is Moses. And Moses, you know, he smashes that ball, and it is heading right for the water hazard, the one that's before the green, in case you aren't golfers. And that's not good. You don't want to go into the water hazard. So the ball is going towards that, and Moses, you know, takes this big stance, and he spreads his arms, and he raises his arms, club in hand, and the water parts, and the ball rolls through it and makes it to the green 40 inches from the hole. Not bad. Jesus, Yeshua, he gets up to swing, and he cranks it out, and it too is headed for the water hazard. And Jesus raises his arms, closes his eyes, and prays. And the ball just skips across the water and lands on the green, 2 feet from the hole. Next up is the old man. He comes to take his turn. And he takes his stance and he drives that ball. And once again, the ball looks like it's going to drop directly into that water hazard, like the two other guys. But just before it splashes down, a fish jumps up from out of the water and swallows the ball. But before it could land and return back to the pond, an eagle drops down from the sky, grabs the fish, and begins to fly over the green with the fish in its mouth. And just then, out of nowhere, a bolt of lightning strikes the eagle, making it drop the fish onto the green. And as the fish hits the green, its mouth open, it spits out the ball, and the ball rolls straight into the hole. A hole in one. Jesus shakes his head. He turns to Moses and he says, "I really think I'm leaving Dad at home next time." Now, I know that's kind of a fun, silly story, but you know, that's basically how the universe works. You put an idea out there and a fish swallows your golf ball or your idea, and an eagle grabs the fish and flies over the green, and lightning strikes the eagle, and then the eagle drops the fish, your idea. The fish lands and spits out the ball, which rolls into the hole, and bingo, your manifestation comes into form, comes into your life experience. We study first cause. We use the Science of Mind book. We use many other wisdoms from ancient times to modern times. But we study first cause. We study spirit. We study mind, or that invisible essence, that ultimate stuff and intelligence from which everything comes. The power back of all creation. The thing itself, as Ernest Holmes would say. We study it to understand it and to learn to use it for our greatest good, right? To manifest what it is, to create what it is we want in our life, the experiences we want. In our studies, we find out that the universe is an equal opportunity provider. Universal principles are never respecters of persons. The universe has no favorites. The universe reacts to my beliefs and my intentions just the same as yours. No one's better, no one's worse. We're all equal, we're all one. We also learn that divine nature isn't everything, right? I was talking about that earlier. It's all energy. There is that within us which partakes of the nature of the divine being, and since it partakes of the nature of the divine being, each and every one of us, we are divine. We are divine in our lives. We are the gods of our life. To the degree that we have decided to take control. Now, science says it in a similar way, but of course, usually a non-spiritual way. And here's something for Carl Sagan. He wanted us to know this. We are a way for the universe to know itself. Some part of our being knows this is where we came from. We long to return. And we can, because the cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. Tesla said that. Einstein said something similar to that. It's all, excuse me, it's all energy. It's all frequency. It's all vibration. So you can use the scientific words or you can use the spiritual words, but it's all the same. The thing then, whatever you want to call that thing, God, the divine power and presence, works for us by working through us and is us always, right? It cannot work for us in any other way. It's not a Santa Claus power. It's not naughty or nice stuff. It spreads itself over the whole universe, this power, and shouts at us, all living beings, even the rocks and the minerals and everything else. We just don't understand how they are used in that way, how they can use the power in their way. But it happens. It's something created. So it spreads itself over the whole universe and shouts at us from every angle, but it can become power to us only when we recognize it as power. We got to recognize this. And not just intellectually. We got to begin to turn the knowledge of our being, the intellect, the logic of this knowledge, into the action of our living. And in order to do this, we use our spiritual tools in conjunction with our personal development tools, right? We take action in mind and in body. And since all thought is creative, then our spiritual tools and our psychological tools are one. And why? Because thoughts are things. Or thoughts become things, however you want to say that. You know, it's interesting, thoughts are things. A lot of people think that's a very modern term from, the last 25 or so years. But actually, a gentleman named Prentice Mulford coined that phrase in 1889. He wrote a book, Thoughts Are Things. James Allen used it in his New Thought books, and Ernest Holmes, of course, used it. Napoleon Hill talks about thoughts are things. And those who are fans of the TUT emails, T-U-T emails, Mike Dooley's organization, he says that all the time. Thoughts are things. Even F. Scott Fitzgerald, in a quote that I saw, used that phrase. Thoughts are things. There's this great song in the Unity religion by Sue K. Riley, and it goes something like this. I am the thinker who thinks the thoughts that changes the things that shape my life. I am the thinker who thinks the thoughts. I have the power to change my life. Isn't that great? They sing that, some of the Unity churches sing that every week somewhere in the service. And I've spoken at a couple of Unity organizations over the years, and I hear this song, and it's very simple. It's kind of fun, up-tempo, but it's so true. And they sing that every week and remind themselves every week that They, you, I have the power to change our lives, no matter if it's a new year, if it's a new month, a new day, or even a new second in your life. You have the ability and the power and the passion to change it. So here we are, 9 days into 2022. Made any resolutions? Completed any resolutions? Some maybe short term as far as needing time to complete it. Have you taken any action for any resolutions you might have made? And I know it's a process. You're going to tell me, you know, but wait, it's a process. I can't just lose these pounds or a pound like that. I don't, you know, maybe I've already put it in my date book the day I'm going to get organized. Yeah, I've just started, but it's only 9 days. I don't quite see yet, you know, the inevitable goodness of spending less and investing more, or enjoying my life to the fullest, or staying fit and healthy, or learning something new and exciting, or quitting smoking or eating sugar or whatever, or even helping others and their dreams. That's a resolution of some people. Or falling in love and finding that soulmate, or spending more time with family, especially if you've realized that you are spending so much time in your career that you're losing time with your loved ones. Those are many of resolutions that many people have started. Maybe you've started one. As you know, I'm not really big on resolutions. I'm not a big proponent of resolutions. Not because of the word, because the definition of the word resolution is a firm decision to do or not do something. But the usual use of it is what I have a problem with, because people throw those resolutions away. And so they don't resolve. They use the word to describe something, but they don't use the word properly because they are not resolved. They are not decided in having that experience come in their lives, or changing things in their lives so that experience shows up. In fact, in this week's article that I put out every week, Thursday or Friday, I wrote, I don't want to say resolutions are bad, but they tend to be pronouncements which, like too many mantras and affirmations and rosary bead prayers, just become words with no respect, no love, no feeling behind them. Or they're chock full of fear, which drowns those words like raid on a bug. That's what happens. That's what happens. We just, we let resolutions go. We don't resolve to have that in our lives. And I'm not here to chastise anybody about making resolutions. I'm here to start a resolution revolution. A revolution which starts and ends in the only place it can, and that is in your mind. In using the divine matrix that I always talk about, which is your brain, your heart, brain, and your gut. That's your mind, your consciousness. Yes, you got to figure out the best actions to take. There's goals and steps and plans and lists and strategies and alliances to make. But the most important, the most powerful work happens in your mind. Not just your brain, in your mind. Now, there's three easy steps in the resolution revolution. They are who, what, and how. And when you have those solid, then supersonic strategies plus start showing up in your life. Now, the who we talked about earlier in the beginning of my talk. There is that within us which partakes of the nature of the divine being. And since it partakes of the nature of the divine being, we are divine. That's it. That's who we are. Who we are. We are a divine being in a human body, expressing itself through this personality, in my case through Jay. Now, the what has to do with your perspective, my perspective. What's your attitude, your thoughts, your feelings, or beliefs about life, about yourself, about your who, as well as about your profession, your actions, your perspective on how life works. Do you have the perspective of how life works that we talk about here? Now, the most common habit that slows our chances of moving forward, evolving into our greatness, is using the phrase, I'm fine. There's a phrase we got to get rid of. I'm fine. Now, I know that whole idea that the word fine could also mean exceptional, yes? But the phrase isn't. For some people, it is. For most people, when you say, I'm fine, it's just an excuse. I'm fine. Don't bother me. I'm okay. But fine then, when we use it that way, fine then becomes a definition of mediocrity, of ordinariness, of being average or middling or middle of the road or uninspired. I'm fine. Undistinguished. I'm fine. Indifferent, unexceptional, unexciting. Unremarkable, just run-of-the-mill, kind of lackluster, forgettable, passable, okay, I'm fine. Most people don't use the I'm fine, like a fine wine, like the greatest example of this, that, or the other. Most people don't use the word fine in that way. I'm fine is like clicking the universal inner snooze button on your greatness, or sending your greatness to voicemail so that you can deal with it later, or not at all, or delete it or erase it. Prentice Mulford, in the book Thoughts Are Things, wrote, but no one experience should be followed and dwelt in forever. Life in its more perfected state will be full of alterations, not a rut into which, if you are once set, you must continually travel. Fine keeps you in that rut. How many years are you going to sit in a rut avoiding your purpose in life? What is your purpose in life? You get to decide that. Emerson wrote, the purpose of life is not to be happy. It is to be useful, to be honorable, to be compassionate, to have it make some difference that you have lived and lived well. Not necessarily to other people, but to yourself. What does that look like? What does that feel like? What does that taste like, smell like? Living a life well lived. What you truly are, what you really are, is much more than fine. You are magnificent, automatically. You are automatically magnificent. I don't care what your personality is, what your supposed stance in society is, whether you sleep in a mansion or sleep in an alley, you are magnificent. And the quicker you realize that, the quicker you can change whatever it is you want to change in your thoughts and this, and thus your life. So part three, the how. The how, well, it's pretty simple. Let me give you an example. I was looking for an attorney once. And I called this law firm of Schwartz, 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 and Schwartz. And a woman answers, and she said, Schwartz, 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 and Schwartz, how may I help you? And I said, well, I'd like to speak to Mr. Schwartz. And she said, well, I'm sorry, Mr. Schwartz has gone to lunch, won't be back till 3. Okay. I said, well, then may I speak to Mr. Schwartz? Because there's 4 of them, right? And she said, I'm sorry, Mr. Schwartz is in Boston trying a case. He won't be returning till Thursday. Okay, I figure there's 4 of them. I said, well, then Mr. Schwartz, please. And she said, oh, I'm very sorry. Mr. Schwartz died a few years ago. He's no longer with the firm. Well, then I figured, well, I got 3 out of 4 is not working, so how about the 4th guy? And I said, well, then, please, let me talk to the last Schwartz on the list. And she said, speaking. So what's the lesson there? What was the lesson for me there? Be specific. Not specific in the minutiae of how the experience shows up. We don't have to outline the steps for the universe. Well, those people in that house, they're going to move, and then I'm going to buy the house, and then I'm going to have that house, or whatever. Or some elaborate thing like the old man's golf ball story that was in the beginning of my talk. You don't have to worry about, well, the fish will get the ball and the eagle will get the fish and the lightning will hit the eagle and drop the fish, blah, 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 blah. What's the smell? That's how specific you want to be about the idea or the thing. What's the smell of it? What's the taste of it? What's it feel like to have that in my life? And take the but out of your mouth. The I'm fine has to go, unless you understand the concept of fine meaning superlative. But also take the but out of your mouth. Yeah, but I can't. Yeah, but I have no time. Yeah, but I wasn't brought up that way. Yeah, but. Take it out. Take the but out of your mouth. With the buts, once again, you're just hitting that snooze button and staying just fine. I'm just fine. I would do this, but I'm just fine. The not moving forward kind of fine. A but in the mouth is actually anatomically incorrect. So leave the butts where they belong, on your backside, behind you. In Wishes Fulfilled, Dr. Wayne Dyer tells us to figuratively tattoo the words of Neville onto our foreheads, memorize them, and repeat them to yourself every time you look in the mirror. And I would add, in your meditations as well, or in your prayers as well, use these words of Neville, or at least remember them or sneak them in there somewhere. He wrote, disregard appearances, conditions. In fact, all evidence of your senses that deny the fulfillment of your desire. I'm going to repeat that. Disregard appearances, conditions, in fact, all evidence of the senses that deny the fulfillment of your desire. And then he goes on and says, rest in the assumption that you are already what you want to be. For in that determined assumption, you and your infinite being are merged in creative unity, and with your infinite being, God, the divine, etc., 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 all things are possible. And he ends this paragraph with, God never fails. Or as Gabby Bernstein wrote, God always has your back, or the universe has your back, is what she wrote. So I want to ask you to join the resolution revolution and work your tools. One, who you are. You are an individualization of the power and energy that made everything, the creative source of all. Number two, what you are. You're the one in charge of your thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. You're in charge. No one else is, unless you allow them. And number three, how to think. Not what to think, how to think. You want to do that boldly, specifically, while embodying that who and that what. And let me add a fourth. Do it with gratitude and appreciation, because that's what your resolution should be. Something that you appreciate, something that you are grateful for having in your life right now. There's a power for good in the universe, and that power is in you right now. You're using it right now. You used it yesterday. You're going to use it tomorrow. So why not resolve and declare to intentionally use it constructively for your greatest good? Our theme this year, all year, we're going to be talking about it in different ways. Our theme for 2022 is communing with your greatness. Communing, vibrating at the speed of the divine, communing with your greatness. So I invite you to live in faith, be the greatness and magnificence you innately are, deep inside sometimes, it seems, but it's there. Model the spiritual prototype or mental equivalent of what you have resolved to have in your life. Do you understand that? You want to model that. You want to be that. You want to take action as if. Just decide. That's what it is. I have this in my life. When you create that mental equivalent, when you use your imagination to have in your mind what it smells like, feels like, tastes like to be that in that experience, be that new perspective or attitude, then it starts to show up. And trust the process. Sometimes it's a process. Sometimes it'll take days, months, maybe even years. But be tenacious in your spiritual practice and action, and synchronize your heart, mind, and the intuition, imagination that is flowing through your gut, this divine matrix that I talk about. Ernest Holmes wrote, "The gardener goes forth in faith to sow his seeds. He has learned that as he sows, so shall he reap, that the law works the same for all alike." And he's talking about the law of cause and effect. You may think of it as the law of attraction, law of correspondence. There's lots of names for this law. He continues with, "We must accustom ourselves to the concept of the impersonalness of the law, the availability of the law, and the mechanical accuracy of the law. If we can conceive only a little good, that is as much as we can experience." We, each of us, are the gardener of our experience. What seeds do you want to plant in your mind? And how will you nourish those seeds to allow them to burgeon into the beauty that you envision, that you have decided to experience? This great song by Eddie Watkins Jr. And it goes like this. "There is a garden where dreams come true, a beautiful garden where God's grace blooms. There is a garden where everything grows, a beautiful garden where love is sown. And in this place of light and love, you can have anything that you're dreaming of. There is a garden where dreams come true, a beautiful garden. That garden is you." Close your eyes for me just for a second. And listen as I remind each and every one of us these words. I choose my words carefully and with intention. I consciously speak the words of power, of meaning, of love, of gratitude, of forgiveness, and from knowing who I am. I speak these words loud and proud, bold and brave, and with the truth backing me up. I choose words of abundance and prosperity, vibrant health, creativity, and love. I do it now and forevermore. And so it is. And in this place of light and love, you can have anything that you're dreaming of. There is a garden where dreams come true, a beautiful garden. That garden is you. It's such a beautiful garden. That garden is you. Resolve to work your spiritual tools as the divine being you are. Resolve to do it with love, respect, faith, appreciation, and gratitude, to boldly, bravely, and with the succulence of your innate and luscious star stuff, resolve to be it in your mind and allow it into your heart and imagine it through your gut so you can experience it in your life. Declare what it is you are going to have in 2022 and watch it show up. Thank you so much. Namaste.